They talk to me when they're too scared to talk to you. It might seem wrong, but it gets them through another night. And eventually the wrong turns will lead them right.
We just heard a snippet of the brand new single Wrong Turns by my special guest. We are going to play it in just a little bit. Ty Baden is here. He's released his first single, If I Knew Now, off his upcoming new album. And now he has released his second single today, and it's called Wrong Turns, and that's the title of the new album. Ty has such a unique voice in country music, and I absolutely love it. So let's dig into the lyrics and the music right now. Welcome to the show, Ty Baden.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so happy to have you here.
I'm happy to be here.
We have planned on doing this for a while now, but it's just been a crazy year. So how have you been?
I've been good. I've slowly been losing my sanity, not being on the road. Mm-hmm. I went from 200 live shows all over the place to being home. I'm not going to say I was stuck at home, because it's been nice to have more time with friends and family and stuff over the last little while, that you kind of take for granted, I guess, when you're on the road so much. You kind of get in that routine, and you don't realize how much you need that downtime and the time to spend with those people until you're kind of put in a situation where you have to.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, because the world gets so busy and noisy, you're going from 200 plus shows, you know, per year. And, you know, then you get your radio tour, then you're back in studio, then you're writing. You know, it's just to take that time is so unusual. So when it's there, you don't know what to do with yourself.
Oh, you have no idea. When COVID and everything broke out, I had literally just got home from a West Coast performance and radio tour. Mm-hmm. I got home March 14th and everything got shut down March 16th.
Yeah.
And like most people, for the first little while, it's like, oh, okay, it'll be, you know, a couple weeks and then things will open up again. And then it was like, okay, you know, things should be open in June. We'll still be able to tour and perform for the summer and all of that stuff. And it wasn't until, you know, we were getting into late August, early September, that I kind of started to realize, oh, okay, you know, this is going to keep going for a while. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until then that mentally I was able to kind of take a step back from the go, go, go all the time. And then kind of turn my attention to, well, now what do I do with all this free time I have?
Mm-hmm. I think we've all gone through that transition. I had to adapt because I was usually doing them in person.
Yeah, and I think that's been a huge change for a lot of people. Now, for me and a lot of people on the artist side of things and the songwriter side of things, we've been songwriting and co-writing over Skype and Zoom and FaceTime and stuff for a long time. I have friends who are out on the West Coast and down in the States that I write with. So when there is more of a transition and a push towards that, it was something that I'd already been doing for 5 or 6 years. But for a lot of people, that disconnect, I guess, was a bit jarring initially.
Mm-hmm. I can't even imagine what that's like, because when you're playing to a live audience, that feedback, that energy from the fans being able to sing back your lyrics and just what that feels like in comparison to doing it on Zoom,
absolutely,
or, you know, some live stream shows, it's just not the same thing.
Well, and for me, and you know, I'm sure I speak for a lot of people in the entertainment industry, you know, I'm an extrovert, and you know, I get my energy from being around people, not from, you know, being by myself and alone and all that kind of stuff. So that's been a big thing that I've been missing for a long time. You know, I've done a bunch of live stream type shows and writers rounds and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. they're nice to be a part of, and it's nice to still be able to play. But now your audience goes from, you know, in person, living, breathing human beings to a chat conversation.
Yeah.
Which it's still nice to be able to interact to some degree, but I've definitely missed being in a live setting with a live audience and my band up on stage with me, and I'm definitely looking forward to getting back to that.
For me, I haven't seen a live show in a year and a half. I haven't gone out and seen any performances whatsoever. It is just, that's my job and that's what I do.
Yeah.
And I just love being around it. And it's just being able to see, you know, the fans react and, you know, going backstage and talking to the artists. So it's just such a different feel altogether, and just doing it this way and just doing it over the phone. And yeah, it's just weird.
it is. And, you know, I think when we're finally able to kind of step back into that level of normalcy for us, it's going to be like a giant family reunion. You know, I tell this to people all the time because, you know, they hear that, you know, as artists, we tour coast to coast and do all the radio interviews. And some people are like, oh, doesn't that get tedious driving and being on the road all the time? But what they don't realize is all of us know each other. And in a lot of cases, we've known each other for a long time. So for me, it's more like I'm driving out to see friends and catch up and have a coffee. And we just happen to be talking about the single that's out or what's coming up and stuff like that. But for me, I miss being on the road and seeing all my friends.
I bet. I can't even imagine. And being with the bandmates, you know, I know that you probably have different people that'll play for you when you get to different locations in the country, but you get used, like you said, it's all your friends and you don't get to see them all the time, especially now. And for a year and a half, it's crushing. Absolutely crushing.
Yeah. And you know, they literally become your second family. I mean, there were times and years where I'd spend more time on the road with my band and my crew than I'd spend at home. Mm-hmm. But I think the trick for a lot of us going back is, you know, I think this whole pandemic kind of opened our eyes to, you know, at least in my case, that I was pushing myself so hard on the music side of things with touring and performing and stuff that I was kind of neglecting things on the personal side of things, not just in the sense of seeing friends and family, but having time to myself to mentally unwind.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're in the middle of all of it, you know, you can't see the forest for the trees type thing. And now having had this downtime and realizing how important that time was on a mental health standpoint and even a physical standpoint, I think the trick's going to be when we have the opportunity to jump back into touring and performing and everything is finding that balance between the downtime we've had through all of this and getting out on the road and performing again and trying to have a little bit more healthier
structure
balance between the two.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because if you don't want to go right back into doing things exactly the way you were, like we all have to have taken something away from this. And, you know, it's different for everybody. But like you said, it's just not going back and doing things exactly the same. I totally hear you. And before I forget, congratulations on signing the recording deal with Shattered Glass and Believe Music Canada. That's pretty awesome.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it was something that we have had in the works for probably about 3-4 months, going back and forth with everything. And to be able to negotiate and sign those kind of deals as an independent artist is something I'm very proud of. And I'm looking forward to working with both of them moving forward. And both organizations have been absolutely incredible and supportive and helpful thus far.
Well, it's one of those silver linings in the year, and you've got, I'm telling you, you have been writing and writing, and so many fans don't realize because you've released, you know, this is your second single today, and you just released your first one in July, the end of July, and then you've got the EP coming out, but you're already working on another one.
Yeah, so, you know, go back 10, 15 years, the process was a lot of artists go in, they do a 10 or 12 track full-length album, and you know, that would be out and there wouldn't be any new music from them for another year and a half or two.
Mm-hmm. Everybody does that different, don't they?
They do. And for me, to put it in perspective, for the Rough Around the Edges album, I wrote close to 200 songs for that album and only cut 10 of them.
Wow.
And, you know, I'm writing all the time. And for me, one of the most enjoyable experiences and the thing I love the most is being in the recording studio and making new music and doing all that. So what I've decided that I'm going to do moving forward is I'm going to do a 5 or 6 track EP album every single year.
Nice.
So that every single year there's going to be brand new music, and it pushes me as a writer to write even more than I am, but also allows me the opportunity to narrow down the song selections to just the very best, because I know that there's so many times where you write a song and you're like, oh my God, this is amazing. And you might have 3 or 4 of them, but now you're kind of feeling pressured. Oh, okay. I have to put out a 10 track album. And I find a lot of people put what I call filler songs on an album where, you know, you go in and you record them and it's like, you know, it's not the best representation of you as an artist or your writing ability. Whereas this, I'm usually going in and it's like, okay, we got to pick 6, but I have, you know, 9 or 10 that I think deserve to be on this record. And then we have to you know, whittle it down to those six. And some of those end up getting carried over to the next project. But then mm-hmm. some of them end up getting written out of that order, because between then and when I jump in the studio, I write that many more songs. So it's pushing me to only put my best material and content forward.
Very cool. Because I know that writing process is so different. And a lot of the artists are doing it. A lot of the artists are doing exactly that. And it takes, you know, experience, but also, you know, depends on what's happening in your life and the structure, how many live shows you're playing, you know, because that's different for everyone. And to do the six, it allows you to be able to direct, you know, an idea. And
exactly.
That, yeah. And it's just, yeah, very cool. Because you've got a very unique voice. I know your voice.
Oh, well, thank you.
The moment you start singing, I know it's you. And that's really unique, you know, when it comes to radio today, well, like with the pool of talent that's out there. And because of the digital platform, you know, people being able to hear it so much easier. You don't necessarily just need to hear music anymore at all, you know, just through the radio station. You're hearing it through all these digital platforms. So that playing field's become huge. And I think it's leveled it out, but you stick out so easily.
Well, thank you. That's a massive compliment. You have no idea.
Well, you got a special gift, my friend. Absolutely loved it. It was so different. I've heard somebody in rock that was similar, and I was thinking about that the other day, and I went, who the heck am I trying to think of? And I couldn't. And I, you know, I just, it's just amazing. Now, let's take fans who may not know you yet, you know, because we have such a large listening base in the United States and the UK and Australia and everybody. So we shout out to everybody out there, but let's take everybody back to how you started up. You grew up in Waterdown, Ontario. And you played
yep.
so many sports throughout your whole life. You know,
I have all the scars to prove it, trust me.
Did you always have the desire to start the musical journey? And how old were you when you got the music bug?
I can remember being, and I don't know how old I would have been, but obviously you know how big the body of a guitar is.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, so it's actually my grandfather's Gibson that I perform with.
Nice.
He bought it brand new in 1942, and for whatever reason, my grandmother refused to get rid of it, even though no one else played. But I can remember playing, sitting and playing that guitar. Now, I say playing, I was literally just hitting the strings because they made noise. But I would have been the size of the body of the guitar at the time. That's how little I was.
Wow.
Now, you know, growing up, when I was really young, mostly my focus was on sports and stuff, but I enjoyed singing, even though back then I wasn't very good at it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was around the time I was 14. I grabbed a guitar. My younger brother was the one who actually wanted it. And, you know, being so close in age, we're only 13 months apart. I said I wanted one too. And my parents were smart and just bought one. And it was, you know, your stereotypical black and white Yamaha starter electric guitar that sounded awful. And I kind of picked it up and never put it back down. But I can remember I would have been about 15 years old and I'm sitting in my room playing the guitar. And I'm singing, I want to say it was closing time. And my brother walks by the room, stops, pokes his head back in and looks at me and goes, you know, you're really bad, right? So it took a little bit of work to get where we are. But it's kind of been always something that's been part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was 17 or 18, I broke my leg in three spots playing football. I broke my tib fib compound. I got a metal rod holding it together. And it was about a year and a half or two off of physio and all of that stuff. And I had been performing and writing and stuff since I was 14. But with that much downtime away from sports,
mm-hmm.
I found myself performing a lot more and writing a lot more and kind of just never looked back. So it was kind of one of those catalysts in my life that at the time seemed like this horrible thing because, you know, any hopes I had of going to the States and playing baseball and all that stuff were kind of gone. But looking back at it, it led me to where I am now.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't change it for the world.
And that kind of leads in, you know, to that first single, you know, that you released too. And we're going to get into that because I love the stories that you tell because you're an amazing storyteller. Who are the music influences in your home and, you know, the impact it had on the writing style that you wanted to do and the release of the music you have today?
In my family, nobody else plays. Nobody sings, nobody plays piano, guitar, nothing.
Not even your grandfather?
Well, my grandfather did, but he passed away in 73. I never got the opportunity to meet him.
Okay.
So that guitar, his guitar, sat in an upstairs closet for 30 years.
Wow.
Before I ended up pulling it out. And the fact that the story goes that multiple people asked my grandmother for the guitar, and for whatever reason, she couldn't bring herself to part with it. Mm. And I'm sure as hell grateful she didn't, because at this point, I've probably played close to 3,000 live shows with that guitar.
He's probably looking down on you, and that probably means so much to your grandmother, because that was probably a big part of their history together.
Yeah. So, you know, growing up, my musical influences kind of came from what was on the radio. And between, you know, at my grandma's place, she always had the country station on. Mm-hmm. So I kind of had that influence from her. And then between my dad and my mom, it was a mix of classic rock and oldies. And then me growing up, you know, I listened to everything from Matchbox 20 and Oasis to Tom Petty, Steve Miller Band, all that. So my musical influences have kind of come from all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because rock sounds like it's in your soul, like that, you know, that it originally started there for you. And like country, you see so many artists turning from rock and going right into country, but they've always blended in some way or another. But that storytelling that you have, you can tell that from Tom Petty, you know, when you're talking about him, and I'm sure the classic rocks, you probably had Springsteen in there and some other ones as well that are amazing storytellers. And the Eagles, well, you know, Eagles were the first country rock. Yeah.
Well, and I think for me, I've never once sat down with the intention of writing a country song. Not once. I just sit down and write the best possible song that happens to be in the room. But I think where all my influence come together, you know, I definitely get the storytelling side of it from country music. I'm a huge Randy Travis fan. And to me, lyrics to a song have to have meaning. If you're just singing something because it has a catchy melody, but when you break down the lyrics, there's nothing there. To me, you're missing the soul of that song.
Mm-hmm.
But being someone who has toured extensively and done, you know, thousands of live shows, usually doing in and around 200 a year, and I've been doing that for a long time, a lot of my stuff is geared towards the live show. So more mid-tempo, upbeat, rock-type songs end up going over a lot better at live events and festivals and rodeos and stuff where you've got a crowd of people out there who usually have a drink in their hand and they want to party. Mm-hmm. And I think given the background I have with, you know, 90s rock and early 2000s rock, classic rock, all that stuff wrapped into the lyrical side of the stuff, it for me, it's just a really cool blend of all of those influences. And it translates really, really well into a live setting.
Oh, absolutely. I'm going to play that lead single that we've been talking about. And this one is pretty special. If I Knew Now, by my very special guest, Canadian country artist Ty Baden, here on Music's Journey.
Here we go. Looking back, man, I'm tanking gas and going fast, there was nothing better. My first truck would never rust, and my first love would last forever. But now that I've been through it all, life was easier back when I knew it all. If I knew now what I thought I knew then, I wouldn't know heartache like the back of my hand. Have a little more money and a lot more sense. If I knew now what I thought I knew then, yep. Really thought that grandpas and good dogs wouldn't get any older. Good times led to late nights and the sunrise didn't hit you with a hangover. But now that I've been through it all, life was easier back when I knew it all. If I knew now what I thought I knew then, I wouldn't know heartache like the back of my hand. Have a little more money and a lot more sense. If I knew now what thought I knew then I'd be wild and reckless all over again. If I knew now what I thought I knew then. If I knew now what I thought I knew then.
I love this song. You've got a way with words. I love the tongue-in-cheek. I love the twist. Tell everybody about writing this one, because we were talking about your storytelling, and you're very deliberate with the arrangements in your music and the vision and the sound that you wanted. So talk about writing this one.
Well, I had the idea for this because all of us, at any point in our lives, we kind of get to a point where we think we have it all figured out. We know what we're doing and, you know, all that stuff. But of course, inevitably you fast forward, you know, a week, a month, a couple of years, hell, 20 minutes. And you look back and you're like, yeah, I didn't have a clue what I was doing. But in that moment, we thought we knew everything. And the idea was, you know, it'd be cool if we knew now what we thought we knew then, you know, if we actually knew everything. And kind of going through that and, you know, you're talking about, you know, you think your first relationship's going to last forever and that the vehicle you have at that time, you're never going to need another one and so on and so forth. But it goes back to, it's one of those things that hindsight might be 2020, but all of those decisions are the things that made us who we are now and led us to where we are. And the twist at the end of the song is, you know, I'd still probably go back and be completely reckless and do all the same things over again. And I was down in Nashville visiting some friends and we were going to write, and I kind of threw the idea out there. And there's some songs that take days and weeks and stuff of, you know, fleshing out the lyrics and all that stuff. But the ones that I find I gravitate towards and that I usually end up recording are ones that kind of just come together in 20, 30 minutes. Just, it's an easy write. It just flows. And this was one of those songs. And I knew before we even finished writing the song that I wanted to record this one. Mm-hmm. And it is so much fun to play live. It was so much fun in the studio. And I can't wait to get back out on the road with my band and be able to play this for everybody.
Everybody can relate to this, you know, in one way or another, because it's a different story for everybody. Like you said, it could be about a relationship. It could be about a loss that you've had, you know, a family member, and thinking about things that you might have done differently. It could be about your pet. Anything, you know, different things that have happened in your jobs, different directions that you've turned. But in perspective, you don't have any regrets. It shapes you into the person that you are today. And having that thought process and the way that you told the story is really cool.
Well, thank you. I do my best when I'm writing to make it as relatable to as many different people as possible. I always get in writes where the people I'm writing with want to write about being on the road and a guitar and stuff like that. And I always remind them, I'm like, that's stuff that we can relate to because we do it all the time, but it's not something that everybody can relate to. And normally there's a core theme or a message with each of the songs, and you want that message to be relatable to as many people as possible. So I take great care with the lyrics to make sure that it's written properly.
And you do, as I said, you're very precise in your direction, and you're very precise, you know, the ideas that you want to do. And people really respond to that. But it's real life. And that's what I appreciate about your writing.
Well, and for me, everything I write has something to do with my life. It's either something that I've been through myself or something that I witnessed firsthand. That, you know, I know there's some people who can just come up with a random concept and write it. But for me, it's got to be genuine. It has to be something that if I'm singing it, I you know, it's something I know what I'm talking about. I'm not just singing it for the sake of singing it.
Mm-hmm. And that comes across when you're doing your live performances as well. So, you know, taking that window of time when people are looking at it, if we had a snippet, a look into the future, I wouldn't want that. I would want to go through life the way I'm going through it, whether hard or not, the goods and the bads, and take that strength and learn how to love and to open up and with no regrets, and to remember that, you know, I wouldn't be where I am today if I didn't have that. And if everybody had a snippet, we would have no personalities. There'd be nothing there. Nothing.
Well, you know, I think the thing that I've learned over the years is even when everything seems to be working against you and things seem to be going south, it's for a reason. And normally it's because you're missing what it is you're supposed to be doing.
Yes.
And, or that there, it happened because there's something that much better around the corner. And, you know, I've learned over the years that when it starts going like that, rather than getting frustrated or upset about it, I start looking at, okay, well, what is that other opportunity I'm supposed to be looking for? Mm-hmm. Or what is it I'm supposed to be learning from this? And, you know, once I kind of wrapped my head around that and took that outlook on things, things got a lot easier.
It does.
Because now you're not fighting against life, yeah, and where it's trying to direct you.
Mm-hmm. Coming from sports, you would have a really good understanding of that.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And I also, you know, there's windows and doors, but I also believe that if you need to, you can just drop your shoulder and go through the wall.
That's right.
Sometimes that's a valid option.
That's a good way to put that. I can remember that one.
Yeah, because, you know, whether it was football or rugby or whatever, sometimes you've got an obstacle in your way, and the easiest way is just go through it.
Yeah, it's a smart thing. Really, really smart thing. I just find the silver lining no matter how bad the day is. I don't look at what's gone wrong at the end of the day. I go by, okay, so what was the one thing that I can take from today? And I just don't think about anything else.
Yeah, and that's the outlook that you need to have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I always look and a lot of people, especially in the music industry, the change and the growth is so incremental that a lot of times people get focused on the fact that they've only made minute improvements or change. But if you look back and go, well, where was I at last year? And then you look at where you're at this year, there's usually quite a substantial difference in where you were and where you've come to. And you know, I think so many people get caught up in the short-term things and, you know, oh, this massive thing didn't happen. But they don't realize that all the hard work they've been doing over the last year has actually propelled them a lot further than they think.
Mm-hmm. And maybe, too, that they aren't exactly where they thought they'd be. But when it actually does happen, you got to be patient, you know, because life has a process. And like you said,
absolutely,
there's always a reason. You might not be ready right now. And taking that time and it not happening right now, when people look back and say, you know what, if it did happen back then, I wouldn't have been ready.
Yeah. And, you know, I had a bunch of those situations come up that, you know, when I first started, I was just like, you know, if I could just get a record deal now and go and do this. And looking back at it now, you know, my live show wasn't where I wanted it to be. My writing wasn't where I wanted it to be. And everything happens for a reason, and it happens how and when it's supposed to happen. You just need to be open to those opportunities when they present themselves.
You are so awesome. You got such a deep soul. You think so much like I do, and it's just, I can relate to every word you're saying. It's so cool.
Oh, thank you.
Now, you did a lot of recording in Nashville. You were usually recording at the Blackbird Studios with John McBride. Because of the pandemic, you were mm-hmm. really smart, and you were in studio. I love the story behind the building, Catherine North Studios, that you ended up going to because you couldn't go to Nashville to record. Tell everybody about that experience and finding this place and the history behind it.
My sound engineer and co-producer, Sean Moore, him and I worked together because Sean actually toured with me for 5 years as my drummer.
Mm.
So he knew what my sound was. He knew my live show. He's a brilliant mix engineer. And the reason we had gone down to Blackbird initially is because they have this big, massive, high-ceiling room. And when we recorded the drums, I didn't want the drums to sound like the over-compressed drums that are on a lot of recordings
mm-hmm.
today.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted the drums to sound like they sound in a live setting. And when you're trying to record something, you usually have to do a whole bunch of crazy things to get it to sound like it's live as opposed to recorded. And to accomplish that, we needed this really big open space with a bunch of microphones and all that to truly capture that sound. So Blackbird was a great fit for that. So when we weren't able to get down across the border, Sean and I actually sat down and, you know, we knew what we ran engineering wise down in Nashville. And we kind of went, okay, well, this is what we need. And there were a handful of studios, some in Toronto and Catherine North and Hamilton, that potentially could have worked. But at the end of the day, Catherine North was the one that had all the microphones and everything that we needed. And given that it's an old church, they've converted this church into a studio. So you have these beautiful high vaulted ceilings, and the recording space was perfect for how we needed to record the drums. The rest of the instruments and stuff we can kind of record just about anywhere, but the drums specifically, we needed that space. And the behind the scenes music video for A Find You Now is out, and it's, you can actually see the stained glass windows in the background and all of that stuff. And it was just a really cool atmosphere. And also knowing that I was going to be filming all the days that we were in there, mm-hmm. it was just a beautiful setting from an artistic standpoint for the videos. But first and foremost, we were able to get the tones and everything we wanted. The staff there was absolutely incredible. And you know, being 20 minutes away from home for me,
yes. It,
you know, given the experience I had with everybody there and the recording process, I'm going to be going back there late November of this year to record the next album, just because it was so fantastic.
Those walls, if they could talk, because I've been there, and
yes. I
was there actually with Gord Downie.
And I was going to say, he recorded there as well.
Yeah, I was there, you know, one of those days that he was in there. But, you know, I just remember him telling me, you know, the stories, you know, about the people that have recorded there and why he felt so comfortable being in that location. And it's just a beautiful place, but the sound that comes out of those walls is just incredible. You know, the acoustics and everything is just amazing.
It really is. And for me, it's one thing to have all the gear you need and an amazing space, but it's another to have the staff that work there be completely phenomenal, but also get excited about and believe in what it is you're working on. You know, I know that there's a lot of people who will show up and they'll do their work because they're supposed to be there and that, but to go in and have the staff listen to the tracks and be like, oh my God, this is so cool, this is amazing and stuff, and have them that excited to be working with you was just a lot of fun.
Yeah, and you also, as you said, you were smart about this, because during COVID, it was a good thing that you had somebody in there to videotape. You had a video crew along with you that recorded the whole time that you were there. Talk about the new album and the videos that you've got coming up.
Yeah, so with the previous album, Rough Around the Edges, we did lyric videos for all the tracks. We ended up calling it the Mule Spinner Sessions, just after the venue that we were in. Mm-hmm. But we did more stripped down acoustic versions of it with the band and I. And I wanted to do something similar for this album. So there's going to be lyric videos for all the tracks on this album as well. But given with COVID and all that stuff and trying to get people together, it just lined up that it made sense to bring the video crew in to film the time that we were in the recording studio and kind of give everybody a behind the scenes look at how the album was made. And it's also one of the few videos where I'm not wearing my cowboy hat. I have a baseball hat on because
so
I have to have the headphones on to hear back what's coming through the mic and stuff when I'm recording.
Think about that.
So that it's, you know, rare footage of me in something other than a cowboy hat. But later this year, we're actually going to be filming full music videos for all the tracks on the album as well. So I'm really looking forward to that, because for me as a fan of music, I love watching the behind the scenes stuff of the track, but
me
I also
too.
Enjoy watching the music videos and having that visual connection to the music. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited to get that done. And it's something that we're going to continue with and carry forward through all the projects.
Oh, that's really cool. I love that side of it, you know, seeing that emotion in the videos and being able to just feel the music in a different way than what you can with the lyrical. But I'm telling you, your next single, holy cow, I had to listen to that one over and over and over. It is so good. And
is that Wrong Turns?
Yes. Holy cow. You are brilliant, my friend. That is some great work. That's a beautiful story. And you got to listen to it a few times to catch everything. It's like, oh, did he mean this? And then I have to go back and listen to it again. And tell us about writing this one, because this is such a cool song. It just came out today. We're so excited about this one. It's called Wrong Turn. Now, talk about that. And that's your title for the album.
Yeah. So Shard Morrison and I, who is now my manager, but also a very, very good friend of mine, he co-wrote a ton of tracks on the last record with me. Him and I pretty much have written every single week for 7 or 8 years at this point. But I met him out in Edmonton at the CCMAs the 1 year. And I was staying with family in Calgary the following week, just visiting, and that's where he's from. So we had met at a writer's round, and he somehow drew the short straw, and he was the guy running the soundboard for this writer's round. And I guess he liked what he heard from me, and afterwards he came up and he introduced himself. He said, you know, can I buy you a drink? sure. He goes, well, what do you have? And I said, I'll have whatever you're having. So he comes back with two beers and two shots of tequila.
My favorite. Okay, go ahead.
About 4 hours later, the other buddy who was with us was passed out on the table because he wasn't able to keep up. And for people who don't know myself or Shard, I'm 6'2", 6'3", depending which nurse measured me, and about 220 pounds. Shard is 6'5", 350. Mm. So at the end of this, I stood up and shook his hand to, you know, thank him for the drinks and his time and all that. And he had this kind of puzzled, confused look on his face. And I asked what was up. He's like, well, normally at the end of this, the person I'm drinking with doesn't stand up. So we became fast friends, and we got to talking. And when I went back to Calgary after the CCMAs, I actually went over to his place and we did a bunch of writing. And I enjoyed writing with him so much when I got home, I called him up and I said, hey, do you want to write over Skype? And at the time, I had never done this before. As it would happen, the first song we wrote over Skype happened to be Wrong Turns. And the idea for it kind of came together. But when we were writing it, we had basically said, we're like, we can't mess up a single line in this song because it could end up becoming cheesy really, really fast. Hmm. And it's one of the few songs that I actually took multiple writing sessions to finish. Not that we didn't know what we wanted to say or didn't have the chords or the melody and stuff. It was that we had to be very, very meticulous about what words we picked and what lyrics. And there were some instances where we had a paragraph that we needed to say, and we're like, cool, we have two lines to say this in. Mm-hmm. So it's trying to figure out how do we condense a paragraph worth of content into two lines. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, the song's about A, not judging a book by its cover, but also realizing that just because you might see someone who appears down and out and making poor decisions and all that stuff, that might just be part of the journey that they're on to get where they need to be. And, you know, the hook line is, you know, eventually those wrong turns will lead them right. Mm-hmm. That might be where they're at now, but they might need to go through this to learn something about themselves or, you know, get through what they're going through. And we wrote this song back in, I believe, 2013 or 2014.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and to me, hands down, it's the best song I've ever written.
I love it personally. Oh, I'm telling you.
And when we went in to do the Rough Around the Edges album, the intent with that album was to build up the catalog of original music to pull for the live show. Mm-hmm. So going into that, Wrong Turns just didn't really fit. And I was pretty disappointed, even though it was my decision at the end of the day, I was disappointed that I didn't get to put Wrong Turns on that album, but it just didn't fit. Mm-hmm. And going in to do this album, I knew without a doubt, I'm like, this is getting recorded. It's going to be the title track. And I couldn't be happier with the way the entire album turned out, but especially this song. And, you know, I can't wait for people to get to listen to it.
Yeah, I got goosebumps listening to it. I absolutely love it. It is out today, and as I promised in that little snippet that we had at the beginning of this interview that we were going to play it, it's off the upcoming album Wrong Turns. You'll understand why when we hear this one. I'm your host, Kim Sear, so here is the latest track out today called Wrong Turns off the forthcoming album by Ty Baden.
Well, I was sitting on a bar stool on a lonely Friday night when in walked a preacher man trying to do some right. He said, hey bartender, what makes you want to live life this way? Serving up temptation for those who've gone astray. Well, you can hear a pin drop with the barkeep lost in thought, and that old man still grew distant, searching for something he forgot. Then the barkeep leaned in closer, grabbed a glass and cleaned it up, poured a cold one for the preacher and said, let me tell you what, they can drown their sorrows in the whiskey night after night, but eventually the wrong turns will lead them right. This bar's my altar, and the barstools are my pews. They talk to me but it gets them through another night. And eventually the wrong turns will lead them right. This bar we sit as equals, but don't judge them wrong or right. As I listen to confessions underneath these neon lights, I can catch them when they stumble and help them speak their minds and get things off their shoulders so they can leave them all behind. Well, I'm a beacon in their darkness as they're trying to find the light. And eventually the wrong turns will lead them right. This bar's my altar, and the bar stools are my pews. They talk to me when they're too scared to talk to you. It might seem wrong, but it gets them through another night. And eventually the wrong turns will lead them right. Overcame him, I could see it on his face. And before the preacher left that night, he found the words to say. This bar's your altar, and the bar stools on your pews, and they can't talk to me. I'm glad they can always talk to you. It might seem wrong, but it gets them through another night. And eventually the wrong turns will lead them right. Yeah, it might seem wrong, but it gets them through another night. And eventually the wrong turns will lead them right.
Told you I would not disappoint when we played this one. This one is amazing, and Ty's got so much to be proud of for this song. Such a credible story, and I think you're going to end up playing it over and over again, just like I did. So if you love the songs off this album, there's the two songs, so don't forget that you can download right now and add it to all your streaming platforms. Share it, and don't forget to call your country radio station and let them know how much you love it. Amazing song, Ty. Really, really good.
Thank you so much.
What a story. I love this story. It hooks you right from the very first sentence.
Well, thank you. It's one of the songs normally in the middle of our show, I'll end up kicking the band off stage for a little bit, and I literally just pull the bar stool up and play this one acoustic.
It just feels so natural to hear the songs and the lyrics that come from you. Is it always like that?
I think for me, when you write from personal experiences and things that you've lived through and seen, and you know, part of the song came from, at one point, played pretty much every dive bar and hole in the wall from coast to coast. And you know, I've seen just about everything at this point. But I feel for myself and a lot of other artists, if you're singing from a place that you've lived through and means something to you, it comes across as genuine. Mm-hmm. And I find every now and then I'll hear a song that somebody cuts or records that even in the performance of it and watching them play it, it's not believable. Mm-hmm. It might be a great song, but from that person singing it, you're like, yeah, like I don't think you ever did any of this.
Mm-hmm. You can tell. And, you can tell.
Yeah, and for me, it's a lot of these songs are stories about my life in one way or another. And I find when it's something that you can relate to as an artist, it's more natural for you to sing it and perform it.
Well, I think this one, when we talk about the, you know, the lyrics, and it takes you, as I said, right from the beginning of the story, and you're talking about people that have gathered in a bar that have been there, and then this pastor comes in and he's judging the barkeep for serving up these people that may have had one too many or going through some rough times, and mm-hmm. getting into that conversation with the barkeep and turning around and saying that these are the stools, these are the places that people tell their stories because they can't say it to you. And this is what they fear. And it's just the turn of the whole story is beautiful. and how the pastor ends up believing in him right at the end of it and cares about judging them and realizing what he had done.
Well, and I think more often than not, we wind up getting stuck in only seeing a situation from the perspective that we're used to seeing it from. Mm-hmm. And we're very, very quick to judge and a little slow on understanding.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what this story illustrates. And you know, one of my favorite lines is, you never know what someone else is dealing with in their life.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know if they just had a loved one pass away or if something else is happening in the background. And oftentimes their actions have absolutely nothing to do with you, whether they're being mean to you or anything like that. It's usually there's something going on
exactly
that you don't know. And if more people approach situations with that in mind, you know, I think people would be a lot more compassionate and a lot more understanding.
Well, it's beautiful. I'm telling you, there's going to be a lot of fans out there that are going to relate to this one. Again, it doesn't matter what's going on in your life. This story can relate to every situation at every age group. I'm just, I'm telling you, you are a genius. Damn, you're good.
Can I get that in writing to show some of my friends?
Well, sure. You know what? You're going to get that in the article. So when you're talking about doing a paragraph or two paragraphs in the article that I got to write for you, it's going to be there. So don't you worry.
Perfect.
Okay. I just cannot wait for the fans to respond to this brand new one. So once again, if you love the tune, you can download it and share it on your digital streaming platforms. Everything that you do digital, and you can quest it at your local radio station. And that's the difference between today and what it was like years and years ago, where you guys have the power to decide for these independent artists who work so darn hard to bring you the music that means something to them. And Ty is brilliant when it comes to writing about real life, and I think we all can relate to that. So don't forget, go in, make sure you add it to your playlist. Spotify responds, Amazon responds, Apple responds. They all do. And these awards that come out for these guys is so worth it. So take the time to do that. Call your country radio station. We would really appreciate that. Are you okay to do a couple of the burning questions?
Absolutely.
Okay. So let's play a little game. Okay. Rapid fire.
Uh-oh.
Beer or whiskey?
Whiskey.
Cowboy hats or, I know the answer to this one already, cowboy hats or boots, or maybe I don't.
Can you have one without another?
Yes, you can.
I mean, if I didn't have boots, I have three pairs of cowboy boots and that's it. And one of them has spurs on it. So I basically only have two pairs of cowboy boots. So I think I have to go with the boots. Otherwise, I'm walking around barefoot.
All right. What's your favorite kind of coffee and what's in it?
Black.
Okay. Okay. Most embarrassing thing that you've ever done on a date?
On a date? See, that's a hard one because I don't get embarrassed. I literally don't. I have zero shame. Doesn't matter at all. So like,
zero
shame
in your game. Okay.
No, so I probably can't even think of something because I wouldn't have found it embarrassing. I probably would have just thought it was funny.
Okay. All right. Craziest thing that you've seen a fan or band do on tour?
A fan or a band.
Mm-hmm.
I had a woman at a show jump up on stage and think that it was appropriate to use me as her stripper pole. Now you have two options in this situation. You can either stop playing and like push the person off, or because she was hammered at this point, I just took like a power stance so that I didn't get knocked over and kept playing and singing until security dragged her off stage.
I would have loved to have seen that. I would have loved to have seen that one.
My band and I also, years and years and years ago when we were doing the bar scene, if a fight broke out, we would just instinctively stop what we were playing and start singing Why Can't We Be Friends, which I thought was hilarious.
Oh, I gotta see more of your shows. I really do.
Well, it's like I don't care how mad you are at someone. Like, if the band stops what they're doing and starts singing "Why Can't We Be Friends," like, how can you keep hitting each other?
And I don't know how you guys keep going, but that would be perfect.
Yep, like, perfect. That was our solution to that problem, and it was highly entertaining for us at least.
It would have been for me too. Oh man. Okay. Have you ever done anything illegal, and what was it?
Have I ever done anything illegal? Is it illegal if you don't get caught?
Yes.
I mean, we've been on the road, and I've been at rodeos and stuff, and it's, you know, like 40 degrees with humidity and everything, and we just found a public pool that wasn't open at the end of the night, and all of us decided we were going for a swim.
I hear it.
Yep.
Okay. Did you have a nickname growing up, and what was it?
I didn't, actually.
Do you have one now?
No. Mm. No, just Ty. Growing up in Waterdown, for whatever reason, at least the guys anyway, we all called each other by our last names for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. So, like, I remember being in the dressing room before a football game, I think, and a really close friend of mine named Grant was on the team. I went to elementary school with him. I've known him for years. And I came into the dressing room like, hey, has anyone seen Grant? And a couple of people were kind of looking confused at me. And I'm like, who's Grant? They only knew his last name. They had no idea what his first name was. So as far as a nickname goes, I guess you could say it's my last name. But I think that's kind of like a small town thing, because I've run into people on the road, and it's the same for them.
I do that when I'm writing articles. I'll use the last name. After I introduce the person, I'll always use the last name. Mm-hmm. Okay, so this one I'm sure is probably going to be pretty obvious. So, favorite baseball team?
Toronto Blue Jays. Mm-hmm. But my favorite baseball player is Greg Maddux, and he played for the Atlanta Braves.
Nice. What about hockey team?
Philadelphia Flyers.
Wow, you're a Philly boy.
I know. I'm a Philly boy. So my dad is a big Philadelphia Flyers fan, and I kind of grew up cheering for Philly and for Toronto. And just over the years, watching old footage of the games from the 70s and all that stuff, like I've just become a big fan of the Flyers. I actually got an opportunity to see them play in Florida, in Buffalo, and I actually went down to Philly and saw a game in Philly. So that was kind of cool.
Nice. That the fans are so good when you go there. Oh, man.
Oh, absolutely.
They get behind their team in ways. It's just crazy. It's just, it's amazing. And that's the way it should be everywhere.
Of course.
Okay, so favorite song written of all time?
Three Wooden Crosses, Randy Travis.
Ooh, that didn't take long at all.
Nope.
Why? Why for you?
I think, I am a massive Randy Travis fan. And one of the coolest things that happened to me earlier this year, so my birthday is April 3rd, and a friend had reached out on the Cameo app to Randy Travis and asked if he could do a cameo and wish me a happy birthday. And, you know, basically most of the cameos was just a quick 10-second thing like, hey, you know, it's Randy Travis wishing you a happy birthday. I got a 15-minute video from him and his wife.
Wow.
Because I've, on social media and stuff, I've covered Three Wooden Crosses and all that stuff. And he knew my music. He knew who I was. He, you know, quoted song lyrics from my stuff and said that, you know, he's been following me for a while and keep doing what, like, it was so cool to get that when he didn't need to do that. All he had to do was just, you know, show up and say happy birthday. That was all the cameo was for, but to get that from someone you grow up idolizing was really, really cool. But I've always been a fan of his music because his voice is just, you know, like we were saying earlier, natural and genuine. Mm-hmm. And all of his songs tell a story.
Everyone.
And to me, you know, you have to have those lyrics and that story, because you can have a song that has a catchy melody and it'll draw people in initially, but without the lyrics and the meaning behind the songs, that song isn't going to have longevity. It's not going to be, you know, like a Free Falling or something like that, where people keep going back and listening to it years and years and years later and finding a connection with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, especially Three Wooden Crosses, the story it tells and the twist at the end and everything, it's just incredible.
Mm-hmm. Same like yours, Wrong Turns.
Well, I will take a comparison to Randy Travis gladly. That is a huge compliment.
I'm telling you, it's such a brilliant song. Okay, your favorite bronc rider?
Ooh, that's a tough question. Rod Hay, probably.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Hey, Canadian boy, his son Dawson is absolutely killing it right now. He had a 95-point ride a few weeks back, which I think puts him into like a small group of riders who have done it, I believe, three times.
Oh, wow.
And Dawson's in his early 20s. But there's a lot of really good Canadian bronc riders who have gone down and competed in the NFR and stuff over the year. But I mean, Rod Hayes at the top, he's like the Wayne Gretzky of that world for Canadians.
Incredible. Do you miss it?
I do, but I also still ride. So the rodeos
competitive end
back,
of it?
The competitive end of it. Yeah. I still compete as often as I can. You know, I haven't been able to in the last year and a bit and I need a new saddle, but, I'm going to be at a few rodeos performing the tail end of this year.
Oh,
and
nice.
Depending on who's there, because if some of my buddies are there, I can borrow their saddle.
Very
and,
nice.
Just wind up. Just don't tell the label and the PR team. Because
please don't hurt anything. Please don't.
Yeah, well, that's what they say. They're like, I don't want to know.
They'd kill you. They gotta be so worried every time that even comes up. He's going, where is it, got a rodeo in it? No.
Well, the one to show, because I know the people who run it really, really well, and I was there performing, and I had some people from my PR team and stuff. They were there, and I went up to the guy running it, paid my entry fee, and I'm like, do me a favor, don't announce my name until after the ride is done.
I bet.
So they're there, and they're like, yeah, the next rider is getting ready in the chute and all this. And like, everybody's kind of like, who is the next rider? And then after I get off, they announce my name and you could just see my PR. The one girl from my PR team just whips around and is like,
no,
like, we have to wait for 10 minutes.
Well, they got to know, because I swear to God, you live on the edge, right? This is everything you do.
I think at this point they've realized that they can't really stop me from doing it, even though... You know, they just hold their breath at this point, and every now and then, you know, there'll be a ride where I get hung up and you know, it's a pretty bad wreck and all that stuff. And of course, me being me, I post the video, and then I immediately message the PR team. I'm like, whatever you do, don't watch what I just posted.
They're probably going, okay, if we're going anywhere with him, just if you turn your back, we didn't know about it.
Yep,
we just didn't know about it. And that's the story we're sticking to.
Yeah.
If you could go fishing anywhere in the world, dream spot, where would it be and why?
That's a good question. I mean, I've been fishing up in Northern Ontario quite a bit, and it's just beautiful up there. But for me, it's not necessarily a location. It's just being with a good group of people, because that's the fun part about it. I've never been deep sea fishing. Like, I think that would be really cool to try. And I keep telling myself one of these times when I'm out on the East Coast or the West Coast, like, I'm going to go. But one thing always comes up and, you know, I'm not able to make it out. So one of these days.
I know that you're a hunter too. And, you know, it's just, there's nothing that you don't do, I don't think. At this point.
I don't dance well.
Oh, come on. What's your favorite dance move?
I don't have a dance move.
What is your best and most useless talent?
My best and most useless talent? That's a very good question. I mean, I'm it's not necessarily a useless talent, but like, I'm literally the guy you can leave in the woods with a knife and I'm fine. You'll come back in a month and I'll have built a log cabin.
So the survivalist techniques.
I'm very good at math and numbers and all that stuff. So like, I can analyze stuff really, really quickly, but it, you know, there's not a lot of situations where that really comes into play.
Okay. Who is the most surprising person that has slid into your DMs?
The most surprising person? I don't know if it's necessarily surprising, but every now and then, for a long time, I would do daily jam videos. So like, I'd get up and I'd play a verse and a chorus or something, and I'd post it and tag the artist in it. And I mean, I've had Dan and Shay message me back. I've had Ashley McBride message me and chat about stuff. Like, just for me, I don't know if it's necessarily random, but it's just, you know, kind of cool to chat with other artists and all that stuff every now and then.
What is your favorite thing to do, you and your bandmates, when you are on the road to pastime?
Well, a lot of times when we're playing the live show, there's, you know, certain songs that are in the set list, and, you know, there's some songs that go over really, really well in a live setting, and there's some songs that are much more laid back and chill, and we don't normally end up putting in the live show. And a lot of times we'll get back to the hotel at the end of the night or wherever it is we're staying, and we'll
jump in,
you know,
some private pools, and no, kidding.
Well,
sorry.
You know, that happens. we'll pour a couple drinks and sit around. And I remember the one night we were playing a run of shows in Ottawa, And the end of the night, they actually put us up in like a townhouse. And it's like 4 a.m, and it's me and my two guitar players. And we're just sitting around the table. We each had a drink of whatever. And we played Lion Eyes by the Eagles.
Mm.
With all the harmonies. It's just like stuff like that. Like we'll just nerd out over music and play a bunch of stuff that we don't normally get to do in a live setting, just because it might not fit that crowd. It might not fit the show.
Mm-hmm.
And just hanging out and doing that kind of stuff.
Well, one of these days, I'm going to see you after the show and just do a jam fest with you guys. That would just be so much fun.
You're invited anytime you want.
I'm looking forward to it. Okay, tell everybody about some live shows and what's happening and the possible dates.
The EP will be released everywhere digitally. Mm-hmm. It should be out, I believe, mid-October is when we're looking to put the whole EP album out.
Okay.
But you'll be able to get the single for Wrong Turns, like Spotify, Apple Music, all that. I know September 11th, I'm playing the Stevensville Ram Rodeo. And then an event that's near and dear to me, I'm going to be playing Saturday and Sunday, just acoustic, at the Rockton World's Fair, which is
nice.
Thanksgiving weekend. And the nice thing for me is I get to go and play those sets in the afternoon, and then both nights go home for Thanksgiving dinner.
Very cool. Very cool.
It's always been one of those weekends where I just would never book anything because I want to be home on the holidays with my family and all that. And it's a fair that, I went to as a kid and, has a lot of history in this area. So it's one of the few times I get to be part of like a local,
mm-hmm.
Event. So I'm looking forward to that. But I think with all the major festivals and stuff kind of being shut down to some degree because of COVID and the pandemic, most of the shows are going to be coming up next year.
We would love to see you live. So
I would love to be playing live.
Well, you know what? You never know. Thanksgiving might still be safe, right? So you might see me there.
It should still be good because it's an outdoor event and it's easy to keep people mm-hmm. spread out and all that. So fingers crossed that'll be good. But with everything the way it's going and people getting vaccinated and stuff, I'm hoping that come next year we can be back on the road like normal and I can start playing all these tracks live for everybody.
Oh, that'd be awesome. It has been a pleasure having you on the show, and I can't wait to have you back and talk about, you got your new music coming up too, so there's just so much. So I guarantee you're going to be back here and we'll be able to have some more fun with you, and I'll make sure I stump you some more on the questions. So I look forward
challenge
to the challenge.
Challenge accepted.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show, and it's been an absolute pleasure, and congratulations on this writing project that you've got as well as this new EP. Phenomenal. You've done such a great job and your writing's just getting better and better, if that's possible.
Well, thank you very much. And it was a pleasure to be on the show with you.
I hope you enjoyed my interview with Ty Baden. You can check out the interviews at musicsjourney.com and the interesting articles with the latest music and videos with all the artists that I interview on nowandthenmagazine.com. You can also listen to all the podcasts on all your streaming platforms under Music's Journey Podcast. I have some great shows that are coming up for you guys. We've got Carly Akins, Brian John Harwood from Kansas Stone, the NBC The Voice, Ricky Dern is going to be here, Aaron Pichette, Tracy Miller, and so many more. That's it for me, your host, Kim Sear. Thank you so much for tuning into Music's Journey.
Well, I was sitting on a bar stool on a lonely Friday night when in walked a preacher man trying to do some right. He said, hey bartender, what makes you want to live life this way? Serving up temptation for those who've gone astray.